turn to Mark. So as we continue our journey in Mark's gospel, it's now Monday morning after the Lord's entry to Jerusalem, the day before. It tells us that when the Lord entered into Jerusalem that day on Sunday, that by the time they got there, it was evening time. And whenever they had got there, Jesus looked over the temple. And they left. And they went back to Bethany. Bethany, by the way, just kind of for your information, Bethany means house of suffering or house of affliction. That's the meaning of it. And this one stopped, so I'll have to use this one. And that's where Jesus was at. And that's where Mary and Martha and Lazarus lived. So that's where Jesus was at. And then I told you about Bethphage. Bethphage means house of unripe figs. That's where he went to get the colt. So those two places were around Jerusalem. But he goes back to Bethany each evening. The Lord and his disciples are now making their way back to Jerusalem. Early Monday morning. And as he does so, an interesting event occurs here. And this event has been debated and has been talked about for years, if not centuries. In fact, many scholars do not believe in the authenticity, of this event for numerous reasons. One, they like to discount the miracles of Christ. Now, they just simply do not accept what it says. So let's look at the text, and then I'm going to share with you what the late 20th century Scottish biblical scholar William Barclay said about this. Of course, William Barclay discredited many of the Lord's miracles as well. He didn't believe the Lord walked on water, and so forth. In Mark chapter 11, we're going to read from 12 through 14 for now. We're going to cover through 26, but we'll read 12 through 14 for now. On the next day, when they had left Bethany, he became hungry. Seeing at a distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to see if perhaps he would find anything on it. And when he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. He said to it, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples, the apostles, were listening. I call this, as we get through it, as we go through it, a lesson in figs. Let me read to you what William Barclay said concerning this. He said, "The story does not ring true. To be frank, the whole incident does not seem, understand this, does not seem worthy of Jesus. There seems a certain petulance in it. It's just the kind of story that is told of other wonder workers, but which is never told of Jesus. And still further, we have this basic difficulty. Jesus had always refused to use his miraculous powers for his own sake. He would not turn the stones into bread in the desert to satisfy his own hunger. And later, he would not use his own miraculous power to escape from his enemies. He never used his power for his own sake. And yet here he uses his power to blast a tree, which had disappointed him when he was hungry. Still worse, the action seems unreasonable. This was the Passover season. That is the middle of April. Actually, it was about April the 3rd, the beginning of April, 30 A.D. The fig tree in a shelter spot may bear leaves as early as March, but never did a fig tree bear figs until late May or June. Mark says that it was not the season for figs. Why blast the tree for failing to do that which it was not possible for it to do? It's both unreasonable and unjust. The whole story does not seem to fit Jesus at all. So what are we to say about it? That's one example. But I believe in the authenticity of this account. And I believe all Christians should. This is also, as we'll come to it, the second time that the Lord cleans the temple out. And we're going to look at that in a little bit. But first, let us look at what happened at the fig tree to start with. A lesson in figs. Jesus comes upon a fig tree. Then the apostles do too, but Jesus sees it from afar off. From what Matthew tells us. And the parallel passage for this is only found in Matthew, and that's in Matthew chapter 21, verses 18 through 22. And the text tells us there that it was early in the morning when they come upon it. They're on the way back from Bethany to Jerusalem early on Monday morning. And Mark gives us that time frame as to what occurs. It's the following morning. And the next thing that Mark relates, Jesus sees from a distance what Matthew tells us and Mark, a fig tree. There's nothing unusual about that. There's fig trees around Palestine. So there's nothing unusual about that. He's hungry, though. And people would question that. Many have questioned this. However, is this not relatable? Jesus was a human being after all. He was a man after all, was he not? He got hungry. Why couldn't he get hungry? I say, well, You know, he's the Son of God. He's a God-man. But ask yourself, why could not Jesus become hungry? Now, the Jews normally ate two times. We more than that, we know. That's what we want to do. But the Jews only ate two times a day. They would eat once at 10 a.m. They were very precise. They would eat once at 10 a.m. And then they would eat between 6 to 7 p.m. What you y'all out here call, and around here call dinner, and we call supper. What many people out here call lunch, we call dinner. So it would be like the supper time. That's when they would eat, two times a day. Now remember, Jesus and the apostles are coming to Jerusalem as early in the morning. As to why he was hungry, the text doesn't tell us. So why speculate about it? That doesn't do us any good at all, I don't think. Maybe from all the things that was going on and that Jesus didn't have a chance to eat. There was a number of times that occurred, was there not? Let the text speak for itself. That's what we need to do. But here's the thing. What the text tells us. When they get to the fig tree, when Jesus and the apostles get to the fig tree, Jesus doesn't find any fruit on it. And this is where they have the problem. And why they think that this cannot be authentic. Didn't really have happened. And why would the Lord, the Son of God, blast a tree, curse a tree, because it didn't have fruit on it? What's up? What's up with that? How unreasonable can you get? Excuse me. Mark tells us, does he not? He gives us a reason. It was not the season for figs. So as a result, it's common for people to say, well, there you got the answer right there. Why look any further? Jesus should have known that, should he have not? It wasn't the season for figs. So why should he expect figs to be there? Lesson in figs. That's what we're going to see. And so Jesus, nor anyone else, should have expected fruit to be there. But, folks, let us not be so hasty. Let us not be so fast. That's what many people do. Well, we're reading the text as it says, and the text said, Mark says right there, the season was not for figs. There shouldn't have been figs there. Well, really? Let's look at this just a little bit further, shall we? That's one of the things we need to always remind ourselves is this. Is that for everything that Jesus did and everything he said, he had a reason and he had a purpose for it. We must not miss that. One of the things that we must never forget. Jesus never did things arbitrarily. He always had a reason and a purpose for it. Now notice, this is what I want us to notice that people forget. See, Mark tells us, yes, that it wasn't the season for figs. But people forget something here. And this is the lesson in figs. On the next day, when they had left Bethany, he became hungry, seeing at a distance a fig tree in leaf. Underscore that. A fig tree in leaf. The text tells us, the English doesn't bring it out, but in the Greek what it tells us is that the fig tree was in full leaf. It was leafed out. All the leaves were there. Well, still wasn't the season for the figs. So what's that got to do with it? Again, Mark tells us that there were leaves, full leaves, fully leafed out, on the fig tree. This must not be dismissed because it's a very significant point. And as I said, it was in full leaf. Here's the point. And Jesus knew that. It's true that Mark says it was not the season for figs. However, Jesus knew that, guess what? There should have been figs on it. It was not the season for figs, no. But there should have been figs on it. And Jesus knew that. Why? Even the apostles would have known it. All in Palestine would have known it. Who knew about fig trees? The fig tree was fully leafed out. It had complete leaves on it. So Jesus had every right to expect fruit on it. You see, there is a particular type of fig tree in Palestine that leaves out in the spring. It fully leaves out in the spring. And once the fruit, the figs, have appeared or developed. In other words, the fig tree, this particular fig tree in Palestine, does not fully leaf out until the little buds, the knops they call them, in the Hebrew, the pachin, the fig tree, this particular fig tree does not leaf out until those develop, until they appear. Now, they're edible, but they're very bitter. They're not fully ripe figs yet. But they have developed and appeared. And this particular fig tree in Palestine does not fully leaf out until those things appear. Until they are there. And the fruit, however, does not fully ripen until the summertime. But there are those little knops there, which develop eventually into fully ripe fruit. The point is the fact that it was in full leaf meant it should have developed, it should have appeared figs already. And when Jesus went up to it, he looks and there's no knops there. There's no fruit developing. There's no figs appearing, but there should have been because the fig tree was fully leafed out. Thus, Jesus curses the fig tree. Now, many people would say, well, how absurd is that? The Lord cursing a fig tree? That's absurd. Really? Well, let's think about that. Let's look at that. Not so absurd. You see what the Lord was doing? Do you think the Lord, when he saw that fully leafed fig tree, he expected figs to be on it? He didn't find any. He could have let it go at that. But instead, he cursed the fig tree. Why would he do that? Think about it. Everything Jesus did, he never did arbitrarily. He did for a reason. And he did for a purpose. He's teaching, he's showing, and teaching the apostles a lesson in figs. But it's a lesson in figs that he doesn't want them to forget. Because it doesn't really have to do with figs as such. It's a lesson for them. He is giving an illusion. If you look at Micah chapter 7, Micah is one of the 8th century prophets. Jesus, this is an allusion to Micah 7 in Jeremiah chapter 8, verse 13. In Micah 7, we find this. Woe is me, for I am like the fruit pickers, like the grape gatherers. There is not a cluster of grapes to eat. A first ripe fig I crave. A first ripe fig I crave. The godly person has perished from the land, and there is no upright person among men. All of them lie in wait for bloodshed. Each of them hunts the other with a net. And it goes on in Micah 7. But the thing of it is right there at the beginning of verse of chapter 7, verse 1. And then Jeremiah, verse 8, chapter 8, excuse me, chapter 8, verse 13. And we're going to see the significance of this in a moment. Says, I will surely snatch them away, declares the Lord. There will be no grapes on the vine, and no figs on the fig tree. And the leaf will wither, and what I have given them will pass away. When Jesus entered Jerusalem, and late in the evening he goes and he sees the temple, he observed. He saw what was happening around the temple. He goes back to Bethany then. He comes Monday morning. He's coming to Jerusalem. And he's coming for a reason, and he's coming for a purpose. And before that, he sees that fig tree, which should have had fruit on it, and there wasn't. It wasn't the season for ripe figs yet, no. But that tree should have had fruit on it. So he curses it. But he curses that tree for a reason. And it all has to do with what comes next. You see, what Mark is doing here is he's giving us a story within a story, an event within an event. You have the cursing of the fig tree that Jesus doesn't see the figs on. And in between that, you have the second cleaning of the temple. And then the last part of it, when they come back Tuesday morning, they see the fig tree has withered, what the text will tell us, from the roots up. The fig tree did exactly what the Lord wanted. That brings us to the second part, the second cleansing of the temple. And the parallel passages for this are found in Matthew 21, 12 through 17, and Luke chapter 19, verses 45 through 48. John, the Apostle John, is the only one that records the first cleaning of the temple. That's where Jesus made a whip of cords, and he drove them out. That's when he first saw what was happening 3.5 years ago, what was happening in the temple. And he drove them out, cleaned out the temple for the first time. And if you look closely at the accounts in John, and then in the Mark, Matthew, and Luke, you see the difference between them. There were two cleanings of the temple. One at the beginning of his ministry, and now here at the end. I believe that Jesus knew exactly what he was going to do. Remember, he saw what was going on in the temple that late Sunday evening. So he now comes to the temple on Monday, and he begins to take care of things. He begins to show his authority. And what he encounters when he gets to the temple on Monday. Look at the text. Then they came to Jerusalem, and he entered the temple. And he began to drive out those who were buying and selling in the temple. And he overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who were selling doves. And he would not permit anyone to carry merchandise through the temple. You see, he took control then. He took control of the temple area. He would not permit anyone to carry merchandise through the temple. And he began to teach and say to them, "Is it not written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer for all the nation, for all the ethne'? But you have made it a robber's den." The chief priests and the scribes heard, and seeking how to destroy him, for they were afraid of him. For the whole crowd was astonished at his teaching. And when evening came, they would go out of the city. So Jesus is there early in the morning. You see how long Jesus stayed in the temple? All day. When it was evening, he left. All day. He did not let them take merchandise in or out of the temple. The religious leaders saw that. The people saw that. They were astonished. You see, this had been going on for some time. It didn't just start that day. What Jesus did the first cleaning of the temple when he cleaned it out, remember, he didn't stay in Jerusalem all his ministry. They went back to doing what they were doing. All for a reason as well. The first gate that the Lord comes to when entering Jerusalem from the east leads directly to the court of the Gentiles. They say that Herod's temple encompassed a total area of what we would, what today they would say, not one, not two, not 10, but 35 football fields. That's a big territory. They say the court of the Gentile was 25 acres. That's a lot, is it not? Well, what was the court of the Gentiles for? Exactly what it was called. It was for the Gentiles to go to worship, those who worshiped Yahweh. For them to worship. They could not go any further. Beyond the court of the Gentiles, you had the court for the women. That's where the women worshiped. Then you had the court, the area where the Jewish men could go to give the priests their sacrifices. So this first gate that the Lord comes to when entering Jerusalem from the east leads directly to the court of the Gentiles. And what does he see? He sees pigeons. He sees sheep. He sees oxen all over the place. Maybe they're in cages and so forth. And he not only sees that, he sees tables with money changers there. What's that for? Just this. You see, the temple hierarchy in Caiaphas and the Jewish religious leaders, they had a thing going. What they would do is, the reason why the oxen, the sheep, and the pigeons are there, the pigeons were for those who were not as wealthy to buy the oxen or the sheep. So what they would do during Passover time and during when people were offering sacrifice, they'd come from a long way. They didn't bring their own pigeon, sheep, or oxen. So they would have them there to sell. And they would sell them at exorbitant prices. Well, the people had to offer sacrifices. So they would buy them there. And guess who got a take of that? Why, Caiaphas, the high priest, and the rest of the temple hierarchy, the religious leaders. They got a take of it. That's why they allowed them to do that in the temple. What was the purpose of the money changers that Jesus overturned? Just this. In order for the Jews, to pay the temple tax, in order for anyone to pay the temple tax, and I remember Passover people are coming from far away, in order for them to pay the temple tax, they had to pay the temple tax in Jewish coins. Well, they didn't have Jewish coins, some of them. So they would have these money exchangers here. And the people would bring their coins in, they would exchange it for the Jewish coins so they could pay the temple tax. Well, those guys also charged an exorbitant amount. And Caiaphas and the priests and the religious leaders, they got a take on it. You think Jesus didn't know that? He not only knew that, but he saw what they allowed. It was in the court of the Gentile. 25 acres taken up with all that. And so Jesus quotes. You can just imagine the scene. He is indeed angry. Did he not have a right to be? That Herod's temple, the temple was a place where people were supposed to worship Yahweh, bring their sacrifices and stuff, but also a place where the Gentile could as well. Can you imagine them trying to do that with all what was going on there? 25 acres filled with that stuff? Just imagine the scene. So that's why Jesus quotes to them from Isaiah chapter 56, verse 7, and Jeremiah chapter 7, verse 11. That's why he says that, what he does. As Brother B.W. Johnson said many years ago, it asserts a universal principle that whatsoever is consecrated to the true God, be it building or society or body, cannot be profaned without bringing on those who desecrate it the severe anger of God. What do you think Paul said, that the body is the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Spirit, because we're to take care of it? So these animals were made available for people to buy for sacrifices, money changers were there. Now there's two results from what Jesus did here. You see the reaction of the people? The people liked it, what Jesus did. Jesus was showcasing his authority. People want to talk about Jesus, meek and mild. Jesus, that's how he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be the gentle guy, you know. Well, what kind of love is that to come in and to turn everything upside down and throw everything out? Jesus is not supposed to get angry. Really? You see, back in Matthew later, we'll see how angry Jesus gets with the religious leaders. But he had every right to. That's why he quotes what he does from Isaiah and Jeremiah. Notice the reaction of the religious leaders. This is the last straw for them. That's why they want to kill him. They must destroy him. That's why Caiaphas later takes things in hand, as he does, because of what Jesus did. See, they couldn't do anything then, but they're going to. They think they're going to get rid of him once and for all. And they'll have the people help him do it. They'll have the Romans help him do it. But at this period of time, Jesus is showing forth his authority. And you can you imagine this scene? Imagine what Jesus looked like. How those religious leaders would not dare move against him. And what the people saw. So that brings us to the last part of the lesson in figs, the story within a story. The next day, Tuesday, Jesus and the apostles return once again to Jerusalem. And on the way, Peter remarks about the tree. When evening came, they would go out of the city. As they were passing by in the morning, they saw the fig tree withered from the roots up. As they were passing by in the morning, they saw the fig tree withered from the roots up. Being reminded, Peter said to him, "Rabbi, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered." And Jesus answered, saying to them, "Have faith, have trust in God." The word that's used for faith here, it's more should be rendered trust. Have faith, trust in God. Truly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, they were standing on the Mount of Olives, be taken up and cast into the sea and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says is going to happen, it will be granted him. Therefore I say to you, all things for which you pray and ask, believe that you have received them, and they will be granted you. Whenever you stand praying, forgive. If you have anything against anyone, so that your Father who is in heaven will also forgive you your transgressions. But if you do not forgive, neither will your Father who is in heaven forgive your transgressions. Again, the lesson in figs. As Brother Paul McGrinnell says, the temple cleaning event between the two parts of the fig tree story is interpreted by it. That's what Jesus was doing, the lesson he was giving. And the fig tree story is clarified by the temple cleaning story. The temple, which is supposed to be a house of prayer, will be destroyed, just as the fig tree with green leaves, supposed to be producing figs, was withered by Jesus' curse. Jesus gives here another lesson to them. There's two parameters around effective prayer here that Jesus is giving: faith or trust and forgiveness. He mentions forgiveness once, but he mentions trust or faith several times here. Once again, as Jesus was wont to do, he's using hyperbole here. I read a good definition of hyperbole. This will put it into a nutshell for you. And hyperbole is an exaggeration to emphasize a point. Jesus was not literally saying, you're standing on the Mount of Olives, tell the Mount of Olives to move and move into the sea. He was using hyperbole here. He was using an exaggeration to make a point. And his point is this. As Brother McReynolds says, the point is not to be able to throw hills into the sea, but that one must trust in order to have prayers answered. A person cannot doubt. That's not saying that we don't have doubts, but a person cannot doubt and still ask in trust. They don't go together. And Jesus was teaching them this. As Brother R.C. Foster said many years ago, what Jesus was giving here was a figure of speech, meaning that they would be able to accomplish more helpful things than any needless moving of a mountain. You look at the miracles recorded in Acts, they're evidence of just that thing, that Jesus spoke the truth. Look at Acts chapter 2, verse 43, chapter 3, verses 1 through 10, Acts 5, 1 through 10, 12 through 16. And you see that. And they learn that lesson. And what Jesus was telling them by the fig tree, the withering of the fig tree, Jesus was saying that my people, God's people, should have been producing fruit. Those religious leaders were like that fig tree. They should have been producing fruit. They should have been actually teaching the people. And what Jesus was saying through all this is he was saying they're fruitless. And he was telling them, just like that fig tree that I cursed and that's withered from the roots up, so they will wither from the roots up because they are fruitless. And what is fruitless will be destroyed. And that happened in 70 AD when the temple was destroyed. The religious system as such was no more then. So Jesus is giving this lesson in that. That's why the fig tree withered. Because Jesus was saying, they're withering just like that because they're not producing fruit. So how do we apply that to today in conclusion? How do we look at that? What does the Lord want from us? Doesn't he want us to produce fruit as well? We dare not be found like that fig tree, all leafed out, but no fruit on us. He wants fruitful disciples. But brothers and sisters, fruitful disciples is not just bringing others into the kingdom. Fruitful disciples is being conformed into the image of Christ. It's being spiritually transformed and helping others so that they can be spiritually transformed as well. I like to think of our Lord this way. And we'll close with this in our lesson in figs. I like to read one of my favorite authors, C.S. Lewis. And one of the things he said in there, and there's a number of things, the Chronicles of Narnia, that are well reading and we can learn from. But one thing is this. This is found in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And Lucy is around the beavers. And this is what we find. And Susan says it first. He's talking about Aslan. You'll understand when you see him. But shall we see him? Asked Susan. Why, daughter of Eve, that's what I brought you here for. I'm to lead you where you shall meet him, said Mr. Beaver. Is he a man? Asked Lucy. Aslan a man? Said Mr. Beaver sternly. Certainly not. I tell you, he is the king of the wood and the son of the great emperor beyond the sea. Don't you know who is the king of beasts? Aslan is a lion. The lion. The great lion. Oh, said Susan. I thought he was a man. Is he? Here comes the point. Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion. That you will, dearie, and no mistake, said Mrs. Beaver. If there's anyone who can appear before Aslan without their knees knocking, they're either braver than most or else just silly. Then he isn't safe, said Lucy. Safe, said Mr. Beaver. Don't you hear what Mrs. Beaver tells you? Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. He's the king, I tell you. Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. He's the king. Jesus, people want to look at him as Jesus, meek and mild. Never does anything, never gets angry, what have you. Is he safe? That's what they want of Jesus. They want a safe Jesus. They want a meek and mild Jesus. Of course he isn't safe. But he's the ultimate of good. And one of these days, he's going to come as the King of Kings. And then we'll see how safe people think he is. For many of us, he will be. And why? Because we trust and obey him. That's what we're going to stand, we're going to sing. Trust and obey. That's what it's about. That's what we got to get people to see. I always liked part of that in the Chronicles of Narnia. Especially that one part. That. There's another part in the books that I could allude to later where Jill is asked, do you eat boys and girls? And what he says there. That's something to read too. Of course he isn't safe, but he's good.